you can hear the Mother Earth call. I know that you can hear the Mother Earth call. Devastated soul through the door and down the hall. But on the way, you stumble, fall, and crawl.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Lost Souls Radio. I'm your host, Mateo. And before we get into today, I gotta be real with you all. Have you all done therapy? Have you all gone to wellness circles? I need you to understand something. You see, I'm a grown-ass man. Well, at least my kids think I'm a grown-ass man. But I have feelings. Well, maybe four of them. But they're tested. And guess what? They're all mine. Oh, yes, they're mine. And I take care of these feelings so much. And I'm still learning about all the other feelings that I carry with me. But I do remember the first time that I walked into a therapy session. This was after my divorce. It kind of felt like, showing up to a job interview. You know, I didn't prepare for it. I didn't even know what language it was going to be in that I don't speak. Wearing the wrong shoes. All this was going through my mind. I just remember the therapist asking me, "So how are you feeling?" And my whole brain, it just went blue screen. I'm sitting there like, ma'am, I don't know. I mean, I'm not issued a manual. I was kind of raised with those factory settings, repress, provide, repeat. If something's wrong, you either fix it, fight it, forget it, that exists. Those are the three food groups of men. And here's the thing. I know I'm not alone. I know that there's some brothers out there listening right now who would rather drive 6 hours in the wrong direction than pull over and ask for help. Or even rebuild an entire engine. Hey, but I'm cool. I'm okay today. We will, maybe even times we'll suffer in silence. Like it's a personality trait or like it's a flex. Oh, you cope? Oh, that's cute. That's usually comments that are directed towards men. Here's the thing, though, relatives. If we're going to ask our children for help, we must at least experience it going through therapy. And I'm talking specifically towards the men, or we intend a men's circle. I've been thinking about what it actually means to be, one of the co-founders of Lost Souls Radio. Being lost really isn't the problem. It's being honest. Being lost means you've stopped pretending you already knew where you were going. The problem is when you're lost and you're too proud to admit it. When you're wandering in circles, but you've got your GPS voice set to toxic masculinity. You know, that voice that's just like, it's recalculating, but also you're fine to keep going. Feelings are a myth. You're basically a robot. So today's conversation, ladies and Germanins, is for every relative out there, especially for the ones who never even given the permission to be lost in the first place. The ones who told to be strong, to be silent, to survive at any cost. So this evening, we're going to be engaging about healing, about lineage, about remembering who you are when the world finally stops asking us to perform. And I can't think of a better guide for this journey. So join me as we welcome in Dr. Patty Siwakwa Xochitlacoyoltzin Ramirez. She's a transactional social worker, healing centered facilitator, a founder of Colibri, and a Chicana indigenous daughter of Maya and Nahuatl diaspora, who carries ancestral medicine into spaces that desperately need it. And trust me, I just gave a few examples how many of us desperately need it. So this sister right here, she has impacted families, training communities, and the sacred Shinashli rites of passage. Now, some of you know the Shinashli rites of passage. So Dr. Patty is here with holding some first space for it, and hopefully Mateo could take something away too to bring it to my own arsenal and tool set. So let's give a round of applause for Dr. Patty. Welcome to Lost Souls Radio. Oh, crawl, stop. Is that for me or for her? I think it's for her. I think it's for her. What's up? How you doing?
I mean, there's no other way to enter any space. Like, if we don't have clapping and hype vibes, what are we doing? Thank you for that beautiful, warm introduction and invitation. I'm so happy, relative. Thank you. Thank you otra vez.
Of course.
I'm so, like, joyful just to be aquí in community and in Círculo with you and with everyone else that's going to tune in whenever they find themselves here.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. And, the podcast is called Lazos Radio. Should I refer to you as Dr. Patty? Doctor, is that okay? Doctora?
Yes, doctora, diosa, you know, whatever folks would like.
Dr. Diosa.
Oh, sí.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you, doctor.
My tía calls me doctora mija. So.
Right on. Those are a lot nicer words than I've been told. Thank you, doctor. So, our podcast is titled Lost Souls Radio. And I wanted to ask you, doctor, if you could just start us off with, did you ever feel lost on your path of becoming who you are now? I know you're a doctora, but what did wandering teach you? But before you answer that, just to let everybody know that, if you all forgot, Lost Souls, the song, it is created by Aslan Underground in reference to wandering and us finding ourselves in this world. But you, doctora, what did wandering teach you on your own path?
Yeah. I always say that I was born fighting for my life, and I haven't stopped since. And, you know, this is me born at 6 months. So I was 3 months premature. And in my growing up in El Sereno, which is Northeast LA, and in my family, I often felt, in some weird way, I often felt like I didn't belong. I as a child, I could see myself like feeling like, I know this is my family, but, you know, we're not, I'm asking different questions. I was always asking, like, who are our indigenous, lineages? Like, as early as like 9 years old, 8 years old, estaba preguntando, I was like, who are they? What are their names? I was the first one ever asking, like, who do we belong to? Mm. Like, where did we get disconnected? Where did we get lost? And, you know, my family never knew how to answer that. And yeah, I just kept asking as I grew older. I went to Woodrow Wilson High School, which is, you know, one of the four East LA high schools, mm-hmm. a beautiful, rich legacy of activism since the 60s and on. And so I remember then also asking, like, where do we come from? Like, what, like, community-wise, but then mm-hmm. also individually. And being Salvadorania and being Mexican, you know, there was always a lot that I was constantly grappling with. As right. someone also who was raised by a single mother and, you know, didn't know my father, who is now an ancestor. And so there's so many different threads that, like, often had me wandering and, like, feeling lost. Like, I remember the moment that there was, like, a switch. And it's really interesting that you talked about therapy and the beautiful way in which therapy and that journey can sometimes help us remember who we are. I was like crying and saying, I don't know who I am, right? And this was like not too long ago. This was maybe 6 years ago.
Mm.
And my therapist was also an El Sereno, amazing Chicana and non-traditional. Y estábamos in her space. And as soon as I was saying that, we hear a hummingbird knock on the glass door. I could see outside, right? The hummingbird knocks, and she's like, that's for you. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And, you know, at that time, I was working on my doctorate. had just left the immigration field because of many things, including burnout and re-traumatization. And so she was like, what does the hummingbird mean to you? And I had told her, well, I know that my family comes from a lot of different places and spaces in, you know, Mexico and El Salvador. I know that the hummingbird can represent the healer, right? In Purépecha, there's that symbology of the hummingbird is the healer. It's the only relative that can go into the underworld and bring back messages. Mm. And even in Mexicayo, there's this belief that it's the warriors that have fallen. And so the hummingbird has all of these representations. And I thought, like, I've always called myself a social justice warrior. I've always been fighting for different, you know, fights, different rights. And it often, too, was at my own expense, right? And so I have a journey where I, like Oyo Shauki, fragmented myself for the struggle, for the movement.
Mm.
So, you know, my coming back to myself really was in that therapy session with that hummingbird knocking. And that's why my organization that I birthed is called Colibri.
Nice. I'm looking forward to learning more. But you mentioned your experience about walking, you know, with this medicine. And for someone who is listening, who feels disconnected from their own historical background, whether it be the cause of colonization, migration, trauma, or assimilation to the white dominant culture, what does reconnecting for you, doctora, in regards to the ancestral medicine look like in your practice from your perspective? What does that look like?
You know, when I couldn't find the names, it really meant just grounding with the elements in my own practice with nature. I kind of started to pay attention to the things that intuitively called me, like, you know, coming from intuition. The pull that I felt in my tummy or in my heart. The types of medicinas that brought me peace and calm. I think those were kind of where I started to feel a little bit more of that energy of reconnection. I think a lot of emphasis has been on, like, finding, doing your genealogy and finding the names and of the tribus and whatnot. But for me, it's really been, like, connecting with Mother Earth, connecting with the flowers, with the trees, with the fire. That's been a little bit about my journey.
Okay, good. No, thank you. I know in your bio, you mentioned about a healing justice, or, you know, like, you know, trauma transformation. I know you spent over 15 years guiding trauma informed pathways for justice impacted families. I wanted to just sit with that phrase for a little bit, just impacted, for a moment. Just because, you know, it carries so much, you know, for a lot of us. But what do people get wrong about healing within the communities that have been touched by incarceration or deportation or just systematic violence?
I mean, a lot of what I think is, like, the misunderstanding is that people often look at folks impacted by the systems, like the criminal justice system or the detention system, as a pipeline from, like, bad behavior to prison. But when I think about it, and when I, like, a lot of what my work has been looking at is naming something that often gets ignored. Many people who end up incarcerated or touched by the injustice system were first children that were navigating harm, experiencing abuse, neglect, instability, and then punished for how they survived it. And so within my own trabajo, I, you know, uncovered that about 90% of folks impacted by the justice system have experienced significant trauma in their life, beginning in childhood. And for young people, especially girls and gender expansive youth, the numbers are higher. The majority of girls in juvenile justice systems have histories of sexual and physical abuse. And so the pipeline that I want us to really pay attention to is that there's an abuse to prison pipeline, right? And so trauma changes how we move in the world. And these aren't personality traits. These aren't character flaws. These are survival responses, right? And so it labels folks as broken. But healing justice, where that comes in, is that not only does it ask us to address the trauma and the conditions within systems, within communities, within families, but it also tells us that healing isn't just an individual process. It's something que tiene que pasar collectively, culturally, and politically, right? So we're looking at the difference between cages and circles.
Oh, ooh, that's a shirt for you. That's got to be a shirt. That's a dope
Let's
friend.
Make that a shirt.
I know, right? Damn.
Yes, cages, they isolate, they disconnect, they punish, they put barriers. Circles do something so different. They hold, they witness, they transform, right? We're more than our worst moments, and we're more than the harm that we cause and endure. Círculos allow us to hold the grief, the discomfort, but also the joy and the sacredness. And so
that's powerful. That's powerful. I mean, you're what you're sharing. I really like that phrase. It's still like in my head, like beep, 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 beep. You're talking about space, you know, and how do you hold space, or what shifts when healing is offered as a right versus rather than a privilege?
Honestly, I think for me, what I've noticed is that when that happens, we're able to see each other in our full humanity, right? And so I feel that when we lean on punitive systems, that often requires us to dehumanize each other and forget each other's dignity. And so when we bring healing, whether it be ancestral, cultural healing, or even, you know, Western modalities that may work for some, right? What we're doing is we're making a different commitment. And this always makes me think, and I know a lot of folks have different ideas or like feelings about the phrase in la quech a la quin, right?
Right. There's I know.
a lot of different thoughts and frames of thoughts. But ultimately why it resonates with me, and I just came from Yucatan, I went to Ekbalam, which is a temple that kind of brings in the jaguar medicine. And, you know, the jaguar is a spiritual ally for me, just like the snake. And so I remember there, the curandero did a limpia for us and said the phrase. And I was like, oh, there's so much like the I'm a Chicano studies double major, and there was so many like that's not real, blah, you know. We have all of these ideas, but he was saying it in the Yucatan in Maya, and he was reminding us that your dignity is tied to mine, your healing is tied to mine, your liberation is tied to mine, right? And so his message and the reminder was that if si tú eres mi otro yo, si yo soy tu otro yo. And so I think for me that's what is possible with healing, is that we can see each other as human beings, our full humanity. We're allowed to make mistakes. We're allowed to learn. We're allowed to get it wrong. We're allowed to grieve, to feel our full spectrum of emotions. we're also allowed to repair. We're allowed to love, right? And we're allowed to remember that we're all sacred.
Yes, yes, yes. I know you were sharing about your experience, and then you shared, you kind of went a little bit into the perspective, because, you know, we have similar backgrounds. So we are born in the Tongva Kish territory. You know, we're highly influenced by the U.S. dominant culture. And it reminded me when, you know, when I was younger, I was really trying to study Nahuatl. And my family were not Nahuatl, this from Nahuatl community. We're from Massawat. But I remember I was like looking, I had this classic Nahuatl dictionary, and then I started working with actual Nahuatl people. What I learned is I'm not saying people need to do this, but for me, I had to throw away the classic Nahuatl dictionary because it was holding me back to be open to Nahuatl people who, you know, live, dream, and make mistakes in the Nahuatl language. And so it was just like a big, I guess, epiphany. I was like, oh, man, I just have to be open. And you kind of alluded to that. I was like, oh, shit, you think you're talking about me? but I wanted to ask you, Doctora, on that tone, has trauma informed care? And, you know, other terminology has become more of like buzzwords, kind of like, you know, restorative justice, decolonize, to name a few. But I know your work goes very deep. And from what people who I've known who have been part of like the program, even the facilitators training, which we're going to get into in a little bit. But what does it actually mean from your perspective to be trauma-informed or even decolonized in a way that honors our spirits, culture, and ancestral, where we don't end up like, you know how I was like, ah, it's all about classic Nahuatl, when I just should have just freaking immediately just accepted this as a Nahuatl teacher sharing, you know, his information.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. So I went to USC for both my master's and my doctorate, and it was really interesting doing those both social work programs that invited me to really buy into trauma-informed care, which at its most basic understanding, it's a framework that acknowledges that people are impacted by trauma. And so in order for us to best support them, we need to address like the root causes of trauma and also create a voice and choice and empowerment so that the person is able to move through that space or through that interaction with the least re-traumatization as possible, right? And so what ends up happening is that it centers the trauma, and then it forgets that humans, people, relatives are more than just the trauma, are more than just what they experience. Even though it can impact them greatly trauma has the power to shape, you know, our lives, right? Especially trauma and pain that is not transformed often gets transferred.
Abuse or to like your surroundings? Is that what you're saying? Like, if you don't take care of it?
Yeah, hurt people, right? We hear that phrase. But also, I'm talking about intergenerational trauma, right? Those patterns that are inherited that we got from our ancestors that have been surviving, right? The patterns that we're replicating, even within organizations and movements. We have to acknowledge that we are in a society that's rooted and anchored in white supremacy. And so decolonizing, healing justice, an integral part of both of those processes or those journeys is that we have to acknowledge that, one, white supremacy is what's running everything, right? Including systems that, like social work, the social work profession, for example. To decolonize means that we have to acknowledge and name it, And to heal it, we also have to know that's the root, so that we can then come back to what is like earth medicine, indigenous base, curanderismo, Eastern medicine, right? I'm also a yoga teacher. I just got my yoga teacher training last year. And so I learned a lot about Eastern medicine and you know, yoga philosophy. And there was so much interconnectedness. A lot of ancient cultures are saying similar things. And Western worldviews are saying those are not valid.
Right.
But they're all saying healing is needed. The medicine is all around you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nature, plants, elements, animals, all of our relations really are critical to our healing. And this is how we heal Mother Earth, and this is how we heal our communities and ourselves. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's I did want to ask you.
3-year workshop.
right. No, thank you. Yeah, no, definitely. We do have to share your information towards the end, and where people can get more access to your knowledge and your experiences. You were given some really great examples of your work and the limitations of conventional approaches. Do you ever experience pushback for those who look like us, or even in fact may look more, do you get pushback from people from our communities that practice conventional ways when you come in with a more decolonial approach?
I have, especially in academia. And, you know, I did my programs. I was one of the youngest, too. I was probably the youngest, even with my doctorate. But that's why I went to get my doctorate, so that no one can tell me shit.
right.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to be undeniable, porque this is what we need to be listened to, right? So, yeah, I would say some folks are maybe don't quite understand how that can be possible, especially since I chose not to pursue licensure, because it just limits so much of what we can do in terms of weaving the medicine to support folks. But I can still do that without becoming licensed, right? And so, yeah, I think a lot of folks that especially are their livelihoods and their ideas of themselves are attached to Western modalities like clinical therapy might struggle with maybe a little more of my decolonial approach. I also find that a lot of folks are needing it, craving it, wanting. Like, I've had some contracts in the last few years with a statewide network of social workers and attorneys that work with unaccompanied minors in California. And my work with them has been all about holding space, using ancestral and cultural healing to support them in their work with unaccompanied minors, especially in these uncertain times.
Oh, okay. And how about navigating or collaborating? What does it look like when you are in spaces where there's caretakers, like right here, we're in Tongva, Kish, Tatavian, or at least I am. But what does that look like when those communities are present, or you get pushback? Or, I mean, share with us, like, what happens? Because I'm sure, you know, other folks are around.
Yeah, I have learned not just from my grandma and my mom to tener educación, to honor, you know, and have respect, but also from my own maestras and others. I have learned what it means to come in a good way and to have reverence, and so I really try to show up that way, here and kind of ask like, who is the elder here in this space and asking for permiso to have palabra is really important, but also to acknowledge and not just kind of go beyond a land acknowledgement, but also be really grounded in like, these are the mountains, right? That surround us, the ocean that surrounds us, the earth that surrounds us, the valleys, like knowing that those, that information too, and being really grounded in an embodied way, I think is also how I've been able to maybe mitigate maybe what could be like showing up not in a good way. And then also like really deferring to the elders in the space to ask of me how they would like me to show up. I was also part of this Indigenous panel in New York a few weeks ago, and I was the only non-Northern Native relative. And so there was different folks from different tribes. And I, you know, I self-identified as a detribalized Chicana and framed it as, you know, because of colonization, migration, and whatnot.
Right.
And towards the end, you know, they were all like acknowledging me and calling me relative, sister, native. And for me, that was really affirming because it is a big wound that folks like myself that like identify as Chicana, por ejemplo, or part of the diaspora of Maya and Nahuatl lineages. That's a big wound of not being able to say I belong to a tribe that recognizes me and that claims me just as much as I to them, right? So, yeah, it is something to grapple with.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. I know my brother, I co-host with, he gave a good example of like the Chicano experience is a... you know, we're finding ourselves. Well, like the Lasso's radio, we're wandering, and sometimes we even have behaviors and characteristics of foster children. You know, there's a lot of commonalities within our foster youth. I did want to ask, Doctora, and get into, I know, you know, you shared a lot about your personal experience. Let's move on to the Colibri organization and cultivating your, you know, the ecosystem of care. I understand that in the ecosystem of care, cultural memory and collective well-being, but I want to know what was the semilla for you and what longing? I know you mentioned about your experience, but was there other experiences that called you into like, solidify, like, this is it. This is, it's going to be called a Colibri. Like, that's it. Like, what was it then?
Yes. You know, I created Colibri because this is an organization I needed. You know, kind of moving through different movement spaces since I was a young, you know, teenager, I often saw how much infighting there was within even our own movimiento, our own communities. In the various organizations that I belonged at, I saw how harm was replicated. And I burned out a few times. I don't really like statistics. I know I've thrown a few. But there was one that really impacted me. It said 81% of social justice leaders experience higher rates of chronic illness, including mental health, diabetes, obesity, heart disease, cancer, and are leaving the field altogether, right? And so seeing that and learning that in my own work and also experiencing that for myself, I remember there has to be an organization that supports those on the front lines. And there wasn't. I looked. There was some que un poquito, you know, just a little bit. But most organizations are there to do beautiful work in supporting communities directly. So I wanted to birth something that could support me, right, doing the work and others like me. And so I had a MSW student, her name is Elizabeth Palomares, and she was like, Dr. Patty, like, at that point, I had named it the Healing Justice Transformative Leadership Institute, which was like this really long name, and it just didn't make sense. And she, you know, talked to me and mentioned, she was like, Dr. Patty, I see you. First and foremost, we need to rebrand. And also, you are a Colibri. Your medicine is Colibri. It has to be called Colibri. And I was like, what? Why? She's like, you just have to trust me. And she, you know, she's an esthetician, does a lot of like other work, and now is just thriving. But, you know, she was all about the brand, right? And I was like, okay, but I'm all about the medicine. Like, I want the medicine to reflect the work, the spirit. And so we kept talking about it. And I always empower my students to co-create with me. I decolonize from even that level. And so I told her, you're an expert too. And so I trust you. And right. So she was like, you have to trust, you have to believe me. The Colibri is your medicine. It's the spirit of this work. And so then that's when I started pulling in like the symbology. The healer, right? Ancestral culture of healing. One. The warriors dying in battle, social justice, human rights, right? And then our ancestral messages. And yeah, we stand on the shoulders of everyone that has come before us, and we're also ancestors in training. So everything that we're doing, all the semillas we're watering this right now, is going to nourish the seven generations forward. Right.
How do you navigate? I want to get into the Shanashli rites of passage, but I have one more follow-up question for you. In regards to our community, how do you remedy, or what are your suggestions for folks who deal with lateral violence? Like even people who are part of the movement together, for my own opinion in doing restorative justice work is that element of restorative justice does not exist in many parts of folks who are, I guess, you know, quote unquote, part of the movement. What is your perspective or suggestion in regards to lateral violence within our own BIPOC communities?
Yeah. You know, and these are conversations that I've been having right now, too, as we're looking at what is our role in the broader conversation around lateral violence and also around preventing. What I, you know, see is like patriarchy, toxic masculinity, white supremacy, all of these things permeate within our movements, within our organizations. And so we have a big, you know, rape culture, por ejemplo, that silences victims and protects perpetrators. And, you know, had an experience that I won't really go into around seeing how like there's whisper networks that get created. So as we're not holding folks accountable, but we know what's happening and we're like telling like people to like pay attention without actually bringing folks in to say, hey, we see you. You're an elder or you're someone that is integral to the movement. You're accountable. Like we're accountable to each other. Don't harm people, right? There's a difference between interpersonal, you know, just like the interpersonal stuff that comes up. Like some of us just don't get along. We're not each other's cup of tea. Right. That is different than like patterns of violence rooted in power and control, right? Those are two things. Our círculos have the power to be a space where we do talk about what it looks like to be a good relative and build our skills to maybe mitigate the interpersonal issues that might show up, but also equally have an opportunity to disrupt cycles of harm, right? Because those are all different things. We're human. We're messy. We're allowed to be. We can make mistakes. I've had fallouts with friends that we were working, like doing things together and co-creating together. That's very different than like enacting violence, right? And having these patterns of harm with multiple folks. And so we have to hold all of these conversations, I think. And more than anything, accountability shouldn't start after harm has happened. It should be something that we build within our circulos from the beginning.
Right.
She naturally writes the passage is a curriculum that is implemented with girls and gender expansive youth. And it's a character development curriculum that helps build identity that is rooted in cultura. And it also helps build compassionate accountability. And so we create entendimientos or acuerdos in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I always say is, these are agreements that we have made that teach us how to be in community with each other. And these are easy to follow when everything's going great, but these are most important when things are not.
Right.
And upfront having conversations around when we make mistakes, what does it look like to hold that? What can we commit to together to make sure that we can hold rupture and make repair possible? A lot of our communities don't have the capacity yet or the skills to even sit with discomfort or with rage or with grief. And mm-hmm. So that's part of the trabajo too. And
what you're sharing is about the Shinashli rites of passage and some of the experiences. What happens to community when these rites are lost or even suppressed? I know you gave a few examples, but if you could elaborate on that, and what have you seen come alive when they're restored? I want to try to highlight some of your success stories too. If you could share a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, when our ancestral and cultural rites of passage are not accessible, what happens is that the systems begin to generate their own rites of passage, right? Whether it be the school system that begins to label youth as maybe as any of those labels that could begin to put them on that school to prison pipeline, right? There's going to be a lot of punitive labels that young people might begin to inherit as part of the way that the system is creating their own rites of passage. We're also talking about a lot of young people that are, again, that have maybe experienced harm in the home. And so they might be going through other negative rites of passages like gang involvement or drugs, substance use, as well as they might be experiencing mental health challenges. And so she naturally, it's not just a circulo that brings youth together to explore their relationship to their identity and their community, but also in a world that tells them that they're disposable, she naturally tells them that they're sacred.
Mm.
Right? And so I think that that's a very powerful contrast here, because again, to my earlier share, like it begins to replace the cage with the circulo, and so that ends up giving young people hope that a different world for them is accessible. And it's an intergenerational curriculum, so it's not just one that affects young people or transforms young people.
I'm glad you touched on that. I'm glad you said that.
Yes, I'm transformed every single time that I do it. And everyone else, families are, communities are. I also, through Colibri, we adapted the She Naturally curriculum so that we facilitate it for facilitators. So trained facilitators get to go through She Naturally for their own healing work, because we can't take our communities anywhere we haven't been. And right. We have a lot of people coming, wanting to work with young people that have their own shit to deal with, right?
Right. Big old baggages coming along. I know I've taken my duffel bags.
What are we doing? we can't bleed into our young people. So I'm like, you know, we say the health of the circle depends on the health of the facilitator.
Oh, that's a good antidote. I like that. We're discussing about rites of passage. I just wanted to bring up to folks who are listening, at least from the perspective of working with men and those who identify men and young boys, is rites of passage, at least within our communities, have been extracted from our communities. They still do exist, but not in a good intentional way. One example of how rites of passage exist without unknowingly causing harm is, at least for young boys, when young boys become men, a lot of older men, they will take young boys to strip clubs. Now, I'm not trying to demonize sexuality or those sisters who thrive in that field and have found a way to survive. But what I'm saying is, when older men and dads and uncles take young boys to the strip club, they're missing out a big part of that young person becoming a man, and also not truly understanding what consensual sexuality looks like. And I bring that up because, you know, you're sharing about the She Naturally rites of passage, and you did talk about the multi-intergenerational. What does it look like from you watching elders, parents, and young people move through these thresholds, because you are actually seeing that rites of passage happen, whatever that process is created for you all. What does that look like when this threshold is together?
Yeah. I mean, one of the beautiful things that you can view right away or observe right away is even within the own rites of passage celebration that we have. It is a community celebration. And so a lot of the youth walk away knowing that they belong to a community, and the community walks away knowing that they're responsible for ensuring that young people thrive, right? That they have the supports and the resources. And throughout the curriculum itself, we do talk about healthy and unhealthy relationships. We talk about, you know, what does it look like to harness your fire? You know, we use the poposhkomi and the fire as a reference for your inner spark, but also for your rage, right? Which can both bring life and it can also destroy. And it can be sacred in that way. But aside from that, we also talk about the messages that young people receive about what it means to be a young person, and moon teachings, right? Our connection to our wombs, our connection to our moon, and even for gender expansive youth, or even our trans youth relatives, like knowing that whether their bodies bleed or not, that they still can honor and connect to the moon. And remember that they are sacred, right? And so I think all of these things bring an opportunity for not just the young people and the maestras and comadres that facilitate, but also for their families who are now hearing new language used to refer to different rites of passages that they might be going through biologically and also culturally.
Mm. I know cultural memory is one of the pillars of Colibri's work. We live in a society that seems It's designed for us to forget and to assimilate into a commodity. What are some examples how you spark, you know, our ceremonies or just our way of knowing and remembrance? Like, what are some ways that you teach this, like, within the curriculum?
Yeah, within the She Naturally curriculum, from the very beginning, we teach both facilitators that we train, but also young people that are part of the circulos, what it looks like to create a sacred space, an altar, or an intentional focused intention tables, what we call it when we go to the schools or the systems, right? But an altar is one of the first elements which can be found in across so many cultures, right? Including religions. And we begin to invite young people and facilitators as they're co-creating these to bring the items that they feel connected to. They don't have to judge the item or make it bad or wrong. It's their space. And so sometimes we have these collective altares that have a rosary, a Buddha, flowers, a Jesus Christ, right? Like, we have different elements cross-cultural, multi, you know, religions and spiritual practices. And we tell everyone, as we're like teaching them how to create an altar, that at its most basic element, we just need to represent the four elements, right? The fire, the air, the water, the earth. And then if they don't have an item that they want to add to it, all they need is their intention. So for many, you start to see their genetic memory be activated, especially when the copal hits the charcoal, right? And you start to smell the smoke. And so whether it be the altar or even the smoke cleansing that we bring to our spaces, these are all experiences that begin to bring folks back to their identity, to their ancestors, and to their sacredness.
Beautiful. That brings us to this part right here, which I love. Thank you for sharing that in regards to altar. And at this point right here, we just want to, if there's any folks that you would like to honor, just bring present, those who have become ancestors. I always call both my parents and my grandparents because they have passed in the past year and a half. But I just want to acknowledge some of their relatives. If you have anyone, Doctora, you want to bring present to the space right here?
Yes. You know, your opening reminded me of my own ancestors that really needed the healing work, including my grandfather, Francisco Talamantes, who passed away, transitioned a year ago. And my two father figures, my biological father, Jorge Alberto Monroy, who was murdered by police in El Salvador. And I was part of the Raza Killing Database project of Dr. Sitli that Aslan Underground was also part of. And I had a track on there where I was commemorating his killing. And then my stepfather, Luis Flores, who died, it's going to be 3 years now, who passed away unhoused and because of an overdose. And he also had been part of the Salvadoran Civil War and so had a lot of PTSD that no one ever recognized until it was too late. And so I know they needed healing, and I've been doing a lot of praying and work to support them and with this new relationship and transition. But I do want to call them in because I do feel them, and I know they would have benefited from being in a men's circulo, where if they could have revisited what it meant to be a man, I think they might still be here.
Right. No, thank you. Thank you for bringing them present. Also, I want to give a quick shout out, a new ancestor, Dr. Rudy Acuna, who also recently became an ancestor. So give a shout out to him. And all those other relatives and our babies who become ancestors, we want to acknowledge you. So thank you. Thank you, ancestors. We appreciate you all. I love you all. Doctora, is there any last word you would like to share about your work? Or actually, how do people, can they get a hold of you if they want to get access to you and to your team? What do people need to do?
Yeah, so we have our website, www.colibri.org. I'm pretty accessible through there. I can also connect with folks on social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm on all of those, and I like to say I'm pretty responsive. But we do have a workshop, naturally training, taking place this week, actually, April 24 to 26. We do have more dates throughout the year. And so folks can connect with me and I can share that information. And we have more programming coming from Colibri as well. So please connect with me. I always say I am part of your lineage now. And so I hope that you do reach out and that we can begin to co-create something beautiful for our community. I think, you know, I'm kind of left with the words of, again, the Inla Quechua Laquín, right? We talked a lot about accountability and, you know, rites of passages and cultural memory. And I think for me, this philosophy transforms liberation into a collective practice. We cannot heal in isolation. We're not meant to. And we cannot rise alone. So let us heal in circulo. Let us rise and thrive in community. And just remember that freedom is something that we are worthy of, that we can co-create. But we're also worthy of remembering that we're worthy of joy, of dignity, of love, and of our liberation, right? And just don't forget that you are sacred.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Patty has been such a gift. The work you're doing, the world you're building, it matters so much. The words, you know, the words that I just can't even express. Thank you for walking this path and sharing it with us today. We appreciate you and thank you.
To all my people.